Welcome to an NCAA tournament edition of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler. And later on, I'm going to be joined by Nick Lorenzo of Mid-Major Madness. We're just going to talk about a whole bunch of random stuff that interests me around the bracket. But to kick things off, I am joined by an expert on the St. Mary's Gales, Zach Farmer of the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast. Zach, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Tyler.
Yeah, so we'll roll right into it here. Some people know my college basketball viewing habits typically end up being just watching a few random games throughout the year outside the A-10. I find a few teams that I like, and I kind of adopt them. I try to watch them as much as possible. Number one on that list this year actually turned out to be St. Mary's, and because of a young man by the name of Aiden Mahaney, who I can't believe is just a freshman and not an NBA prospect, and we're somehow going to get to watch him in college for years to come. But a lot of VCU fans probably have no idea who he is. So give everyone a breakdown on this stellar freshman guard.
Sure. So Aiden Mahaney is, I mean, it's kind of funny because he went to high school just a few miles away from the St. Mary's campus at Camp Olindo High School. So he was very familiar with the St. Mary's program and how all that ran, Randy Bennett and whatnot, well before he ever stepped foot on or suited up for the Gales. And this kid, there was a lot of hype about him coming in, and you always kind of like take the hype from about incoming freshmen, especially true freshmen, with a little bit of grain of salt because you don't want to put too much pressure on them. St. Mary's played overseas in Australia during the summer, and so a lot of their games were being broadcast. So I got a chance to catch a couple of those games, and the one thing that stood out to me was just how poised this kid was. Like from the get-go, it's like he understood the offense. He understood how to find space. Like despite the fact he's not the most athletic guy, like he's a good size. He's 6'2", right about there, 6'3". He's not the fastest. He's not the strongest, but he just knows how to find spots on the floor to get his shot off. He's definitely a score first guard. Like he's not your prototypical point guard. He's going to look for his shot, but he still understands this offense, which for a freshman in Randy Bennett does not trust a whole lot of freshmen, which I think that can't be overemphasized. Like the only other guys I can think of who have had this much trust from Randy Bennett as a freshman, everyone's going to know their names, Matthew Dellavedova and Patty Mills. That those two are the almost like the real comparisons to talk about Aiden Mahaney. I'm not saying that he's as talented as either of those guys, because that's a high expectations to hit, but he's been so poised and just has become almost their most dangerous player at times throughout the course of the year. And he just seems to get better and better and better.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you mentioned Dellavedova and Patty Mills. I somehow blanked on his name there for a second. I've only been watching him play for 15 years now. Because in terms of pure talent, I've been watching St. Mary's for a long time. And I feel like he's already not quite in that class, but in that next tier down, it's where it's basically him and Mickey McConnell. He's obviously still got a lot of time to run those guys down.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny, like, because Mickey is one of the assistant coaches on the staff. So like you make that comparison, like he's going to be able to learn from Mickey himself to kind of like really start to fill into that. He does feel like he's already such a special player. He feels that if he learns this offense a little bit better, he starts to fill out his body, hits the weights and whatnot. A lot of St. Mary's people I know, like, or at least like a lot of the fans or whatnot, have talked about, like, he looks like an NBA guy eventually. If he kind of tracks the way we think he's going to, or at least the way I think he's going to track, I think he's probably here for 3 years before starting to look at the league. because he's already on everyone's radar. And I think that's the one of the differences. A lot of times you talk about, like, especially mid-major players, they don't get onto the radar for a couple of years. He's already on everyone's radar. Like, he's already made an impression, beating and taking over a game against Gonzaga the way he did, hitting a buzzer beater against BYU in Provo. So he's already made quite the name for himself, even though he's just a first year. But it's really exciting to kind of see where his growth is going to take him.
Yeah, and he's a guy who can get hot from anywhere around the floor. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of these statements, but he's not the only dangerous guy you got on the perimeter. You got a deadly sharpshooter, another guy who can really get hot quickly, and Alex Dukas. And that's going to present a tough challenge for any perimeter defense.
Yeah, Alex Dukas is one of the better three-point shooters in the WCC. I'm looking at the numbers just to make sure I have it right. He was a 41% shooter from three this year. He's been really the team's best three-point shooter for the last few years. And this is a guy who on any given night could get you 20, 25. This team is pretty balanced on the offensive front. You do have a lot of guys who average right about 10 per game. So Dukas, Mahaney, Logan Johnson, Mitchell Saxon. So you have a lot. This is a balanced group. Dukas, as you pointed out, is like definitely that perimeter guy you have to watch, because he's going to knock down an open three. But then you're talking about like the other side of that guard equation is Logan Johnson, and he's almost the opposite of that. And he's not the best three-point shooter, but he is maybe one of the best finishers around the rim on the West Coast. And he had a stretch there toward the end of the season where he was averaging nearly 25 points a game for like the last, I believe it's 7-8 games or something like that. He really started to kind of take over in it. And this is his fifth season. So he's used the COVID years. So this is his last season. But Logan Johnson has, not only is he one of the best defenders, he was the WCC Defensive Player of the Year, but also like he can really take over a game driving to the hoop and finishing at the rim.
So two things that just shocked me about Logan Johnson here, pulling up his bio on the website, because you called him a guard. And for some reason, this entire year, the way he plays, I thought he was like 6'6", 6'7". He's only 6'2". But the bigger stunner to me is that he's from California. The first time I watched this team this year, had them on in a bar on mute. And so I couldn't figure out half these guys' names. I just started referring to him in my head as Hugh Jackman, because he has this insane beard, and I hope he still has it. I haven't watched them play in a few weeks. He kind of looks like Wolverine. And given St. Mary's history, I just assumed he was Australian.
No, no. Like, it's funny. It's like, I definitely see the Wolverine-esque with the beard and everything else. I believe he does still have the beard. It's maybe he's cleaned it up a little bit, getting ready for the tournament. But like the base of it is still there. It's just he's gotten a little bit of under control at this stage. But this is you want to know about Logan Johnson as far as like when he was initially recruited out of high school, he went to Cincinnati and Mick Cronin recruited him. So this, you kind of know like the kind of profile that Mick Cronin wants to recruit. He gets tough, hard-nosed defenders who are just going to really play like at 100% the entire time. And after a year, he transferred to St. Mary's, and he's really kind of grown into the leader of this team. He's really kind of been like the heartbeat. Like, if you want something to get going, Logan Johnson has been that guy, especially late in the season. And even last year, it just seemed like as the season kind of goes along, he gets better. As the games mean more, he gets better. And we saw it even last year in the NCAA tournament. He had a really good game against Indiana in their opener. He had still a pretty decent game against UCLA, even though that was a game the St. Mary's lost. But it just seems that every time they need someone to step up, it's Logan Johnson who takes that role.
So great three-headed attack on the perimeter. Have any of the best defenses that the Gales played this year been able to really slow down that group? Because that's honestly what VCU excels at, or especially in the last month and a half of the season here, they've done an incredible job with Jaden Nunn taking out opposing point guards, Mahaney-type players, and they have so many great options on that perimeter defense that this does kind of play into what they've done well, but they've done this extremely well against teams with two great options out there. We haven't seen them have to face a real three-headed monster like this.
So this is one thing I'll say about what has happened. And I think Gonzaga, the games against Gonzaga for St. Mary's are kind of like the example of what to do to maybe disrupt this team. And this is easier said than done is what they did on Mahaney, because Mahaney has been such a lightning rod for attention over the last like month and a half, is that they switched up and put a larger defender on him. They ended up switching out and putting Julian Strother on him. So you're looking at a long 6'7", 6'8" wing to be able to guard him. And that seemed to bother Mahaney a little bit more. And Strother is also one of the better defenders in the WCC. He's likely going to be first round, late second round pick in the draft. This is a guy who I think provided a lot of problems for Mahaney. I do think that Logan Johnson is maybe the little bit of the tougher matchup, only because he is so different from a lot of, I would say, more college guards today, where like it's so focused on how well they shoot from three. This is a guy who is going to attack on both ends of the floor. But the one thing this team has also struggled with the last few weeks has been the press. And there's no mystery about this. They struggled in three straight games, two against Gonzaga, one against BYU, about handling the press. When Gonzaga did that in Spokane, it completely disrupted their offense. This is a team that tries to slow it down, wants to be very deliberate in the way they run their sets. They try to use the entire shot clock. And Gonzaga and BYU forced St. Mary's to speed things up, which got them a little out of whack, got them a little uncomfortable. I felt like that they handled the press a little bit better against Gonzaga the second time around in the WCC championship game, even though everything else went wrong for them in that game. They didn't shoot well. They did not defend well. But it felt like that at the very least that component was not as big of an issue as it had been before. Now, one of the things I think that they need to be mindful of going in is St. Mary's needs to be more aggressive going into trying to break the press and trying to look for those scoring options. Many times, like as I was watching, it's like they would catch it out and be able to break the press. But then instead of trying to take advantage of having someone underneath the basket, they try to slow it back up and really try to run the offense again, rather than take advantage of the mismatches they might have. So, and this, from what my understanding, from what I know of what VCU is going to try to do, that's one of the big things, because from my understanding is like, this is a team that's going to try to force turnovers and pressure what Sam is going to try to do. And that's right now seems to be one of the weaknesses.
Yeah, and we've seen it's a little bit of a different VCU team than people kind of remember from the Shaka Smart era, where they're still pressuring the ball, but not necessarily bringing the same full force press that they used to. It's a lot of half court, one-on-one, can we force you into bad passes? And that's where we see the power of Jaden Nunn defensively, harassing the best point guard that he's had to play all season in Yuri Collins into two pretty bad games here in these final 2 weeks. And that's a guy that I would compare to being pretty similar level as Mahaney. So, and this is something is actually going to be really helpful for VCU. Switching up those matchups in those last few weeks kind of unintentionally prepared them for the Gales.
So one of the things I would also kind of point out with St. Mary's is that we talk about like the guards, you can't overlook actually how impactful and important Mitchell Saxon has been for this team as well. Their center, 6'10", 6'11", he's been one of their more consistent scorers as well down low. He's been a double-digit scorer all year long. He's one of the conference's better rebounders as well. I'm just trying to take a look here, and I believe he's right around like 7 or 8 per contest. Yeah, 7.8. And he's also been one of the better rim protectors in the WCC as well. So this is someone I think that you can't also overlook. Like, yes, I know like the guards get a lot of like the attention and everything else, but he's almost kind of like been one of those anchors behind on the offensive end for this team. And they run a lot of the offense through the post. And this is something St. Mary's has done for years, whether it be the Omar Samhans, the Brad Waldos, the Jock Landales. They run a lot of their action through the post.
So how's the depth look like down low beyond Saxon? Because we've seen one of the big growths for VCU late in the season is they've been able to put pressure on opposing bigs in terms of foul trouble from all over the court. They've been a great dribble drive team. And we really saw from Brandon Johns in the second half of the A-10 title game, just going at Tamani Kamara, pressuring him into foul trouble in something that kind of swung the game in VCU's favor. And I think that they'll probably look to do that again against Saxon.
Yeah, the depth, I would say, is one of the, especially at that position, is a little bit problematic right now. Only, I say, because the backups there are so young. You can point to Harry Wessels. He's been the backup center for the most part of the season. Big 7'1 kid, but he's very raw. And there have been times we've seen late in the year where he has definitely shows his inexperience and shows where he still has a lot of room to grow. So he's been at times a liability in these high pressure situations. But a guy who's really, I think, played really well down the stretch off the bench and can fill in at that 5 spot has been Josh Jefferson. He really has kind of come in. He's starting to fill out what we think some of his potential could be. 6'8", 6'9". He's typically a 4, but he's been playing some of the 5 in smaller lineups for St. Mary's. This is a guy who was a teammate of Julian Strother in high school. He comes from like a program that has really good pedigree. He's really grown over throughout the course of the season. He's a guy who can stretch you out. He can hit a 3 in the corner. He can play down low. He rebounds well. But at times we do still see some of those freshman mistakes from him as well. And I think that, to your point about the depth, that could be one of the areas that that VCU could take advantage of if Saxon were to get into foul trouble and they have to rely on these younger centers and forwards.
All right, so let's go big picture here now. Let's say St. Mary's comes out, they play their A game. What are the 3 things that we're going to see from them that would basically power them to a great performance?
So I think the first thing is that they stay really connected on defense. I mean, I think last I looked, they're still number 8 in KenPom in adjusted defense.
Exactly. And just barely ahead of VCU. We got 2 exactly. Top 20 defenses in this one.
Right. And I think that's the thing. They have to play that defense. And they're not going to look flashy while playing their defense. This is the type of team that just wears you down because they play such good fundamental defense. They stay in front of you. They rebound really well. That's one of the things that St. Mary's kind of keys on. They have to clear the defensive boards. If they do that real well, they're going to obviously limit the opportunities for VCU. And that's going to propel a lot of their offense. The other thing is that they're going to need to shoot the 3 well. This is a team that typically does shoot well from the perimeter, but they've had quite a few games recently where they just aren't making shots. I could point to any number of a few of the Gonzaga games in the last month or so where it looked like they were getting the looks, they were getting their opportunities, but they just weren't knocking them down. And so I think it's a point of that they have to be sharp. They have to be on it. You have to have, but I think both Mahaney and Dukas really have to come through. But also I think you need something out of Kyle Bowen, a name I haven't actually mentioned yet. He is one of St. Mary's better defenders, but he also for a good chunk of the season was also one of their better 3-point shooters. And so this is someone I think that also has to play a big factor. He's shooting just shy of 40% from the field. 40% from three, I should say. And they have to get that. They have to be able to shoot well from three, because this will open up the lane for them and be able to have Logan Johnson operate and be able to have Mitchell Saxon be able to operate down low. If they don't shoot well from the perimeter, I think this is going to be a, it's going to be an uphill climb for St. Mary's.
Yeah. So just as we're talking here, I try to formulate some keys to the game. So I'd love to get your input on these, but what I'm starting to see here, can Jaden Nunn continue his great run of defense, slow down Aiden Mahaney, really make him uncomfortable, try to force a young player in his first NCAA tournament game into a bunch of mistakes? Can St. Mary's find a way to beat the press, feed Dukas and Bowen into some of those open three-pointers? And then who's going to win the battle on the other end? Is St. Mary's going to be able to slow down a set of VCU guards who all of a sudden have been excelling at getting to the rim?
Right. And I think this is one of, this is obviously going to be a challenge for St. Mary's. I mean, they have faced some dynamic guards over the course of the season. I mean, you take a look at some of the matchups they've had. They had Oral Roberts early on in the year. They also had the San Diego State, who had some really good guards. They've seen Gonzaga obviously three times this year. They've seen Santa Clara with Brandon Pajemski, who has made a lot of noise, and especially over the last like month or so. They've had their share of challenging guards, and for the most part, they have done really well against that. And I largely kind of point to Logan Johnson, because he is, again, like one of the better defenders on the West Coast. He's one of the better on-ball defenders, I think, on the West Coast. And I think that's where that challenge is going to be. But also, we're talking about like one thing that really kind of like, if you want to point at one number for St. Mary's that makes the difference, is the turnovers. I was talking with the St. Mary's play-by-play guy, Alex Jensen, earlier this week, and he pointed this out to me, where it's, if St. Mary's in their wins are averaging just short of 10 turnovers a game, when they lose, it's about 14. So really, like, that is kind of like almost the number. If you can force St. Mary's into a bunch of turnovers, as you pointed out, of like make them make mistakes, that's really what is the kind of the key against St. Mary's.
Yeah, and one other thing I should throw in, because we have kind of neglected the big man matchups throughout this. I don't even think I've said the name Jaden Deloach yet, and God forbid, he was VCU's second best player here in the last 2 months. But St. Mary's is an elite rebounding team, especially on the defensive end. VCU's been kind of hit and miss on that end. That's a spot where, because I think in the end, the big guys will probably come close to canceling each other out. This game's going to be won by whose stars on the perimeter can outduel the other ones. But if St. Mary's can win on the boards by 8 to 10, then that might be enough to win an even battle where maybe Mahaney and Ace Baldwin basically kind of just cancel each other out.
Yeah, and if you look at over the course of the season, I mean, St. Mary's does out-rebound its opponents by an average of 7. They're like, I think, about plus or minus 7 on the rebounding front. I think that's definitely obviously one of the keys. Like, they are one of the better rebounding teams, but if you can keep them off the boards and really create second chances, that's, again, another recipe for success against St. Mary's.
All right. Any other keys to you, any other important players that you feel like we've just passed over at this point, or even anything that you'd like to know a little bit deeper from the VCU perspective?
I think, like, because these are two teams I've actually seen each other in the NCAA tournament, and it's kind of interesting of like, we're kind of like seeing round two of this, even though it was, I think, back in 2017-18 when these two teams last saw each other in very, very different squads. The VCU team, very different from what it was then. St. Mary's, very different team from what it was then. I think, like, one of the things I'm thinking of is just like what the expectations are for this VCU team. Cause like, I feel like, cause we know like this was a down year for the A-10 overall. And because this was the only representative, I'm not used to seeing only one A-10 team. You're not used to seeing only one A-10 team make it. just like, are what are kind of like just like the expectations on that front to like what VCU is capable of? I know like there are a I know that there are a lot of people are taking VCU as the favorite as a favorite 12-5 matchup, which if I saw that St. Mary's Gonzaga game last week, I would probably pick VCU too. I guess like that's kind of like where I am. What's like the is there the level of expectation going into this one?
I think a lot of VCU fans especially look at like the Bart Torvik game score numbers where you can pick and choose where you want to start in the season. And when you go from New Year's on, this has been a top 25 team in the country over that span, according to those metrics. And you look back, like all of their worst games came early on. There was the choke job against Arizona State. No Ace Baldwin in that one. Getting killed by Memphis also without Ace. They lose to Jacksonville at home, which is a game that I guess almost 3 whole months later now still doesn't make sense to me. They get killed by Duquesne, basically forces the team to have an epiphany. And ever since that game, they've played differently. They've played a different style. They've lost twice in the last 2 months since that's happened. And so you can be fooled by the 12 seed. And I think if you ask their fans in December, they'd say that simply just making the tournament makes it a successful year. But at this point, they look at that. They look at the fact that St. Mary's doesn't seem to be playing their best ball at the moment. And I think that they're pretty happy with this matchup. And that while maybe they're not fully expecting a win, they certainly feel good about the chances that it's going to happen.
Yeah, I will say I was none too happy to actually see VCU pop up on that screen as the matchup for that one. So I would probably largely agree with the VCU fan sentiment. Like, cause yeah, that I saw that VCU pop up and I was not happy.
Yeah. I mean, as someone who was planning on rooting for St. Mary's throughout this tournament, I was disappointed. I know Lenardi dropped them to the sixth line after the Gonzaga loss. I was hoping that they would get a chance to play one of these crappy at large bid teams, as opposed to playing really any of the 12s. I didn't want to see them go up against VCU or College of Charleston. Like, now we get some great mid-majors facing off when we should be getting to watch VCU face, I don't want to say Miami, because I actually think Miami's really good, but face like TCU or Iowa State, and getting to see St. Mary's kill some bad ACC team.
It always seems like that the tournament committee finds a way to pit the mid-majors against each other. I know like there's always like, well, that means one of them moves on. It's like, well, but we want a shot at the big boys.
Yeah. And I mean, we all should, unless there's like some sort of fight at midcourt, everyone should be coming out of this game rooting for the winner to beat UConn, who is going to be very vulnerable in the second round to whoever wins this game. But I think we can all get on board with that on both coasts here.
Hey, you never know. Rick Pitino's Gales might be able to pull the upset.
I don't know if I want to root for that or not. I always root for the mid majors, but I don't want to see Pitino kind of walk out of there after a great moment like that. I want him to go to St. John's pissed off. All right, so we'll close it out here. Give us your possibly semi-biased prediction for this game.
I think this is going to be a close one because both of these teams play such good defense. I don't think anyone's going to get away from each other early. This one feels like it's almost like a first to 65 wins. And so I'm definitely going to be a little biased, but I think this is going to be a close St. Mary's win. Probably something like, I could see 68, 62 or something to that effect.
I am actually going to mimic my co-host Matt on this. The last thing he said on our last game prediction pod, when we were talking about VCU Dayton going into the championship game, said if VCU can get this game into the high 60s, pushing the 70s, they're going to win. 60 through 65 is kind of a no man's land that anything could happen. I actually feel very similarly about this game. I think the numbers are probably a little bit higher because St. Mary's just simply has a better offense than Dayton does. But if this game starts to open up, I think VCU is the better team in an open transition game. If it's a rock fight, VCU tends to excel in rock fights, but if this is one of those, then it's definitely going to be advantage to the Gales.
And I will make the one final note. I believe it's only two teams have scored more than 70 points against St. Mary's this season, Gonzaga and Oral Roberts.
Two teams both ranked ahead of VCU on the committee seed list this year. But Zach, thank you for joining me. Where can everyone get your coverage if they're trying to learn more about the WCC, maybe see a different perspective during this game, which I doubt they are, or if St. Mary's gets the win, if they want to follow along and root for the Gales later in the week?
Yeah, for sure. You can catch the unofficial WCC Hoops podcast on YouTube. You can also find it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And then also you can follow me on Twitter at Posts by Zach. Most of my commentary is going to be happening there, fighting it out with the most of the Zag fans that I'm in a constant fight with.
Yep. Everyone be sure to go give Zach a follow. It'll be even more relevant if we ever get those Dayton St. Mary's home and homes rolling again. But Zach, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
All right, I am now joined by Nick Lorenzen of Mid-Major Madness. Nick, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Tyler. Always love talking A-10 hoops. Always love talking mid-major hoops. Busy day, busy week. Transfer portal opened up, NCAA tournament, NIT. Duquesne Dukes are in the CBI. It's going to be a fun couple days here.
Yeah, we'll touch on Duquesne before we wrap this thing up, but I wanted to have you on, hit four big mid-major questions going into this NCAA tournament. First one goes right along with what I just talked about with the St. Mary's VCU game. So the 12 fives, this is a particularly good group of 12 seeds this year. And so everyone's looking for the big upset. And quite frankly, I think it's pretty easy to make a case for any of the four right now. So I want to go the opposite way. And you kind of indirectly answered this question. Great little column on Mid-Major Madness earlier today, but I want to have you talk about it here. I'm going to flip the question. What five seed are you most confident will just come in, take care of business, and roll on to the weekend?
Yeah, like the weird thing coming into the tournament is when you look at the five seeds, they're usually like not playing good basketball. They're usually very bad, but one of the five seeds this year is Duke, and Duke is red hot. I think it's nine straight they won. They just won the ACC tournament. They pretty much smoked Virginia. It was never close in the title game. And, you know, they're playing Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts is the longest winning streak in the country. Coming a couple weeks ago, I was like, I think this Oral Roberts team could make another run of the Sweet 16. But the thing that makes them unique is they have this guy, 7'5", Connor Vanover, transfer from Arkansas. Shoot the three ball pretty well. He averages about 1.5 per game. He's really good off the pick and pop. And then they still have Max Asmus, who is on that team that beat Ohio State a couple years ago, made the Sweet 16, averaging over 20 points per game. But the thing that, like I said, the thing that makes him different is Vanover and Duke is Kyle Filipowski, who's going to be a lottery pick. He's 7'2", so I think he's going to have the clamps down on him. So if I were to pick a 5 to beat a 12, I would pick Duke, and I hate Duke, and I have Duke in the Final Four. I just think they're playing really good basketball right now.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, too, when you look ahead. The winner of this game, pretty decent chance that they could end up against Purdue if they can make their way through round two. And so even if it's Oral Roberts swinging the upset, you mentioned Vanover, this would be odd for a mid-major team, but either those two teams actually have the right guy to go battle with Zach Edey in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and Purdue's been winning. It's kind of been like they've been tripping over themselves late in games and having to hold on to very tight leads. So, you know, if one of those teams does advance to the Sweet 16, which there's a really good chance, I don't know who the four is in that region off the top of my head, but yeah, it's a perfect matchup there because they have the 7-footer matchup with Edey, and Edey's had trouble when other teams have put legitimate pressure on him. with big men.
Yeah, I'm trying to get that four up. It's not loading here quickly. But, oh, it's Tennessee.
Tennessee, that's right. I'm going to say that. Right, I don't know what. Who I also don't think is going to win tomorrow. As with the day we're taping this, Jordan Brown, really good big man. He was sixth man of the year in the Pac-12 in 2020, 2021. And then he transferred to Louisiana. I don't know why he transferred down, but he transferred down. He's averaging just under 20 points and, like, just under 9 rebounds a game. So, I think that's one of my big upset picks. Tennessee's not been playing well. Zakai Ziegler has been out for a while. Ever since he's been down, they've really struggled. They lost back-to-back games on buzzer beaters, and they've just been sticking around in the top 25. I really don't think there's anything too special about that team right now.
Yeah, and I kind of pulled this off track here, but I do want to take it back to that Duke Oral Roberts game here for a minute. So, like you mentioned, Vanover likely going to be kind of canceled out by Filipowski. Max Asemus still has a chance to go off. And we saw 2 years ago when Oral Roberts made the Sweet 16, it was Asemus, and it was to a secondary degree Kevin O'Banner, kind of as that wingman, awesome big. So let's just say hypothetically that Asemus is able to get his, that he dominates the battle with Jeremy Roach. It's another legendary game from him. Does Oral Roberts have the wing power whatsoever to match with all of these stud freshmen on Duke this year? Even though a lot of these guys have kind of underperformed their recruiting ranking, it's still a bunch of NBA guys across the court for the Blue Devils.
Yeah, and the thing is, Duke has the depth. I just don't think Oral Roberts really has the depth. They have about two other players in their starting lineup that are really good, but Duke has the depth. When Oral Roberts played really good teams, they played them close at times, but they didn't win them. Like, their last loss, they would have a really long winning streak. They'd have a longer than 70-game winning streak right now, but they played New Mexico in about the middle of January. So New Mexico was really real, and at that time, they have a really good backcourt of House and Mashburn, and they choked them up. Oral Roberts really doesn't have any good wins, so I just think the depth from Duke's going to be way too much for them in this game.
All right, so let's take it over to a 4-13 game. And I mentioned in the last segment, St. Mary's, one of the two mid-major teams outside the A-10 that I really just kind of latched onto this year. Team that I really enjoyed watching. Well, that other mid-major is the Kent State Golden Flashes. And so my question to you, if we change the seed numbers, if Indiana-Kent State was a 5-12 instead of the 4-13 that it is, would this be the hot upset pick over any other?
Oh, yeah, totally. That was the first one I saw, and I'm like, I think that was my favorite upset pick when I looked at the bracket originally. You know, they're led by a former Duke and Sincere Carey. Sincere Carey didn't have the best season this year, but when the conference tournament came around, he had two 30-point games. So he started to click it again. They have a big man that can shut down Trace Jackson Davis and Miren Thomas. Jalen Sollinger's great in the backcourt. Malik Jacobs, JUCO guy, Indian Hills. He's very good. Rob Senderhoff's been coaching this team at the top of the MAC for years. I just don't think Indiana has too much outside of Trace Jackson Davis that can really, like, that can help them in this game. I think this is a really tough matchup. There's a lot of mid-majors who I feel got really bad matchups in the tournament, like Charleston. Charleston has to go up against San Diego State, who's a great three-point defense, and Charleston shoots about 47% of their shots from three. So I really like this matchup for the Golden Flashes. You know, they've won NCAA tournament games before. They've made their runs in the last 20 years. Yeah, Upsenderoff wasn't there, but they've made the runs. I just think Sincere Carey's playing really good basketball right now. Miren Thomas is a great big man. Malik Jacobs had a really good tournament as well. I really do like this Golden Flashes team. I'm happy they made the tournament because their three losses in the non-conference were to Charleston. That was by two. Very questionable officiating. Gonzaga, they led by about seven, I want to say, at the under four timeout. They ended up losing by maybe five, six, seven. And the other one was Houston. And Sincere Carey did not have a good game. He went 2-for-13 from the field. He had a whole bunch of points from the free throw line, but that was a terrible offensive game. And they still stuck into it with a team that many people have winning the national championship this year. So I really do like this Kent State team. A lot of people also forget that they were the first team out in the AP poll in about late January. So they're legit.
Yeah, two things I'm very interested about in this game. Number one, who does Sincere Carey guard on Indiana to start things off? Because they got not just Trace Jackson Davis, but a potential lottery pick on the wing in Jalen Hood-Scafino, who is definitely their best perimeter guy, but 6'6", already getting close to an NBA body. That's a tough size mismatch for Carey, even though he's probably the Flash's best defender. I'm wondering if they'll give him a try on him, or in a matchup between two guys who never got to play each other because the city game doesn't exist anymore. Do they just deploy Carey to just take out Pitt transfer Xavier Johnson and basically just kind of leave those two studs, Hood-Scafino and Jackson Davis, to just try to do all of their damage one-on-one?
Yeah, I don't think Johnson's played since December, but I was looking at that too because for some reason I think that there might be a chance that he's coming back, but he hasn't played since December. But
I knew he was out a long time. I actually thought he did come back already because that was what I had been seeing on Twitter. But
I guess not. Yeah, I mean, Indiana does have an insane amount of size. I would probably stick him on Hood-Scafino because Trace Jackson Davis is going to be picked up by Miron Thomas. But when you look at the matchups, the Indiana does have a good amount of size to this Kent State team. I just think Kent State has more of the dynamic factor. Trace Jackson Davis, yeah, he's the second best player in the country, but Kent State has about 3-4 guys who can really go off and make a difference. And if two of them click, it's a different ballgame.
So one more piece with this, the thing that worries me for Kent, this is a team that is not good shooting the three.
No.
And really only two good three-point shooters on the team. One of them, Giovanni Santiago, I do know that he is out for this game. And so can they score enough against an elite two-point Indiana defense?
Yeah, I mean, so Ken Baum has a 73-69. Kent State, I feel like they've been playing teams much closer than they were at the beginning of the season, because when you look at, like, I guess they were playing teams close, but it didn't really look that close. Their last five games take out the they rolled Toledo in the title game. They rolled Northern Illinois in the quarterfinals, but they play close with a very good Akron team who has size. Akron would probably be my MAC compared. If I was to compare a MAC team to Indiana, I would compare Akron to them. And they just beat them twice. They beat them by 5 in overtime in the regular season finale. They should have won in regulation. It was a really bad call. And then they beat them in that semifinal game. But, I mean, I don't know. That's really tough for them. 217th in the country in three-point. But their defense might make a difference there. 39th in the country in adjusted efficiency. They're good at stopping the three-ball. Indiana doesn't really shoot the three-ball. But they're all 30th in block percentage, 20th in steal percentage. So I think the defense is going to be a factor in this game. If their defense clicks, they'll be good. They aren't going to rely on the three-ball that much. Sincere Carey needs to have a big game. That's just the main factor, I think, for this Kent State team. And Indiana with Trace Jackson Davis, it's whoever has the bigger game there. It's going to be a 1-2 punch. Not a 1-2 punch, a one-on-one little boxing match.
Yeah, and for anyone who hasn't seen Sincere Carey since Duquesne, he has become a far more confident offensive player. Basically, think the guy that we all believed he would be at his ceiling is what he is now. So he's going to give a really fun game there. But I want to take it back to the 8th of the bracket where that Duke Oral Roberts game resides. And we kind of already talked about where the winner of that is headed, but it's not a guarantee that it's against Purdue. So question number 3 I have for you, the best of the mid-majors this year, of the surprising mid-majors, San Diego State and St. Mary's are always good to some extent. Florida Atlantic, top 25 team for a good chunk of the close of the season, top 25 in KenPom. They come in as a nine seed.
They just got 25 this week too, so they're back in it.
Okay. Yeah, I lost track of the AP poll because I stopped caring a while ago. But
who cares about the AP poll right now? But yeah.
So they end up with a brutally tough draw. Memphis, who just won the American tournament, just to really solidify the fact that the committee just doesn't watch the American and Big Ten championship games and lets those affect the bracket. Mm-hmm. They come in as an 8 seed. Purdue is waiting as the 1. And so question number 3, what are the chances that Florida Atlantic, in the midst of this magical season, can find their way into the Sweet 16?
Yeah, they've been playing really good basketball right now. But when I saw them at Charlotte, and they were doing it all season, they have really, really slow starts. And a lot of the time, they'll have to play from behind. They didn't do that in the championship against UAB. Right away, they put foot to throat and absolutely demolished them. But that's what gives me worries about this FAU team. In Memphis, we saw it on Sunday in the American Championship. They're up about 20 points 15 minutes into the game against a national title contender in Houston. And they should have beat Houston in the regular season in Memphis. In Memphis, yeah. But they hit that, Houston hit that buzzer beater. So this is a really good Memphis team. Kendrick Davis is there from SMU. He was a player of the year in the league last year. And I just think that's a brutal draw for FAU. FAU's, since they lost, they broke that win streak at 20 games. They've changed some things up. They had their top three producers come off the bench. Now they come out, they start. So they've been changing things up. But you know, this FAU team doesn't rub me the same way as they did a couple months, as beginning of February. And this Memphis team's just clicking on all cylinders right now. And I still think it's Purdue's quadrant to lose up there. But they'll have a tough second round matchup if it's either Memphis or FAU, but I have Memphis winning it.
And it kind of feels like last year, ironically, with Memphis, where Gonzaga was clearly the best team in that section, but you get to the early second half when they had to play the Tigers, and you're just kind of wondering to yourself how the hell the number one overall seed got stuck having to play that team in the first weekend.
Yeah, all it is right now, I do not believe the watches these games, and it's all metrics. It's all metrics because I was shocked Oral Roberts was not an 11. I think they purposely screwed Charleston so they could give him a tough matchup. There's a lot of bias against mid-majors, I believe, in this bracket. They're matching these teams up against teams that have an advantage against them. Because if Oral Roberts was playing St. Mary's, which would still suck because it's two mid-major programs, Oral Roberts would win that. If Charleston was playing Virginia, I think Charleston would win by 20. But yeah, it's all about making the best matchup, so it makes sense on that path. But I think there's a bias against mid-majors.
Well, there definitely is, and St. Mary's actually kind of got screwed in the opposite way that you would think. After they got crushed in the WCC title game, a lot of the major bracketologists bumped them down to the 6th spot. And I was hoping that they would end up as a 6 seed. I know at least Lenardi had them down there. I would have loved to see them play like one of the teams coming out of the play-in, as opposed to getting VCU or basically any of these teams in the 12 line.
Yeah, the 11 line is horrible.
Yeah, I mean, we all just saw the Pitt-Mississippi State game.
Pitt got gifted that game. And the crazy thing is, I think Pitt still has a clear path to Sweet 16. Well, because I don't like Kennesaw, I don't like Xavier, and Iowa State as like two guys, and I don't trust them outside of Hilton.
I do want to litigate this real quick. Everyone says Pitt got gifted the game, and it feels like they did, but they were better because that's how terrible Mississippi State was in that game.
Mississippi State's terrible to begin with. I don't know how they made the tournament. I don't know. They just like magically popped up in talks last week, and next thing you know, they were in the first four. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, that I would have loved for St. Mary's to get to play any of those teams as opposed to the Rams, but three different mid-major matchups: St. Mary's VCU, San Diego State Charleston, Memphis Florida Atlantic. We got screwed for the second round, a chance to see more of those teams in it, but we ended up with three absolute must watches in the first round. But I want to wrap this up here. My final question, maybe I'm off base, but I feel like this might be the best 15 line we have ever seen.
Yeah, it's packed. It's Princeton, Colgate. Who else is there?
Grand Canyon, who I could kind of care less about.
Grand Canyon's a 14. They're a 14, which I don't think they should have been a 14. I don't think
it's UNC Asheville that I could care less about. The other one's Colgate, who I definitely thought should have been a 13 or 14.
Who was that? So it was Colgate, Princeton,
Vermont.
Asheville, Vermont. So, yeah, I mean, you got Vermont every year, who's usually a 12 through 14 seed. This isn't John Becker's best team. They don't have any size, but they have the guards. I think I'm not that big on Marquette, so I think Marquette might be vulnerable there, even though nothing really does anything for me with this Vermont team. They've been playing really good basketball the last 2 months, though. Princeton, they didn't beat anyone, sure, but that's a really good basketball game. Tosin Ebwuamwam is going to be a must get in the transfer portal whenever he enters, because, you know, these Ivy League kids can't do graduate years at Ivy League schools, and he's going to be the number one big man in the transfer portal. So you got that. You got Colgate, who's the top shooting team in the country, top effective field goal percentage team in the country. They got to play Texas. That's a really tough draw. Texas off the Big 12 title game. Come into the conference tournaments, they were my pick to win the NCAA tournament, but I think they might have a little bit too much momentum. And then actually, you said Asheville doesn't do anything for you. Asheville is the team who I think has the greatest chance to win a 15-2 matchup, because they got Drew Pember down low. He's a Tennessee transfer. He's top 10, maybe top 5. He's number 2. He's number 2 in the country in foul drawn per 40 minutes. I saw him in the quarterfinals of the Big South tournament. He had 22 free throws on 20. He made 22 of his 24 free throws attempts. And he's player of the year in the Big South, defensive player of the year. And then they got Tyjon Jones, who's a guard who can shoot the lights out of the ball. He had a really big championship game. So UCLA a little vulnerable with its injuries. I think Asheville has a good chance there. If Colgate can score 100 points, hell, give him a chance against Texas. But that was a really tough draw. Princeton, the thing is, Tosin, he's going to get doubled up by Arizona's two big men. Arizona has a great front court, and Vermont just doesn't have the guards, but I'm not that sold on Marquette. So if I were to pick a 15 over 2, I would pick Asheville.
Yeah, and that was going to be my question, because I think we're going to get a 15 over 2 this year. There's too much parity at the top this season to not see a big team go down. And quite frankly, I kind of just don't like the 14 line. So that's how I've settled on this 15-2 thing. And it actually sucks, because I'd rather Princeton play any of those threes. I think they got a brutally bad draw, because Tosin against the Arizona front line is just really tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the rest of that team's just way too young to really do anything. Princeton's always in good hands. Mitch Henderson, great recruiter, but yeah, that 14 line stinks. I don't like this all. I don't understand how they're 14. The only team they beat all season was Liberty. Grand Canyon doesn't have one of its other guards. They haven't had one of their other guards since January. They kind of just caught fire in the WAC tournament, and I can't even recall the other 14s off the top of my Kent State's a 13. I can't recall the other two 14s off the top of my head. So it's like the 15 line is stacked.
Yeah, the 14s are UCSB, Montana State, Grand Canyon, and Kennesaw. So kind of a Western tilt there.
Yeah, those other two have a chance. UCSB has a lot of experience, and A.J. Mitchell's one of the best young guards in the country. And then Montana State, they got their teeth smacked in the tournament last year, so maybe they'll change something up. Jabril Bell is a pretty good big man. So who knows? I'm not that sold on Kansas State either. So, and the three seeds suck, like we said.
Yeah. But for me, the one that I'm looking at here, it's Colgate over Texas. Colgate just shoots the bejesus out of the ball. We saw them go into the Carrier Dome and beat Syracuse, which, it's not that impressive of a win by the end of the season, but they still won. in a brutally hostile environment. They're the kind of high ceiling team that could beat anybody on a given night. Uh-huh. And who knows, they might come out and just suck, but they're 20-1 since they played on December 30th. They just killed everybody in the Patriot League all season long. And I'm done questioning the Big 12 in March, because they've proven these last few years that they are the best conference of basketball. But every year we see one Big 12 team get everyone kind of juiced up at the end of the season, and then they put out a huge dud. I think like the Iowa State team of 2015 with Gorgie's mm-hmm. Niang and DeAndre Kane and all those guys, losing the game where Ron Hunter falls off the stool at Georgia State.
Yep.
Like, we always mm-hmm. see a good Big 12 team choke immediately. And this year, I don't necessarily think it has to be Texas. I just think that they ended up with a really tough team who can beat them.
Yeah, I think Kansas State might be one of those, too. I don't know how hot Kansas State's really been. I know they were good at the beginning. No, they've kind of fallen off. But they were good at the beginning of conference play. So I think that's a tough matchup for them. But, yeah, like you said, and now we're going to start we have questioned the Big Ten. Big Ten hasn't done anything in years. So the Big 12s obviously took over as the top conference in college basketball. It's been that way for a while.
Yeah, the Big Ten is not the best conference in basketball. It's not even close to that. We all know that, but we will get to enjoy watching a bunch of Big Ten teams lose this weekend, as is customary, to kick off the NCAA tournament. But then on Sunday, we're all going to begrudgingly get on Flow Hoops, in the only way that I will ever possibly turn on that terrible website. Down in the CBI, Duquesne as the 5 seed, taking on Rice. I don't know how much you followed Rice this year. You were in tune with the mid-majors, but this is a deep cut even for you. So I'll give you a chance to just talk about any team in the top half of that CBI bracket that you would like to see Duquesne play, that the Dukes will be able to end up in a good battle with.
Yeah, let me pull up that bracket. But that Rice team's not bad. Scott Pear, their head coach, he's super fiery. So if they have beaten Duquesne, don't be shocked if he goes out to midcourt and like starts trying to pump up the crowd. He's done that so many times. He's like, what the hell? My lights just went out. But he like waves his arms and stuff. He's a whack job. But they got a really good team. That's going to be a tough matchup for Duquesne. They'll play the winner of Southern Utah and North Alabama. North Alabama was really good at home this season. Tony Pujo, their first year eligible to make the NCAA tournament, they laid an egg in the ASUN quarterfinals. But they're going to play a Southern Utah team who their head coach just went on to be the head coach at Bowling Green. So they're going to have a assistant elevated. But I hope they don't play Eastern Kentucky. If they do play Eastern Kentucky, that'll be a fun game, though, because Eastern Kentucky's super fast. They play really good basketball. They call it the most exciting 40 minutes in basketball. The Dukes have played Indiana State this year. They beat the Sycamores. And I really like that ISU team. So that would be a fun semifinal matchup. So if the Dukes end up playing Indiana State or Eastern Kentucky in the semifinals, ESPN2, 7 o'clock on Tuesday, that'd be a ton of fun. But Dukes have to get past a really good Rice team first. That I don't think there is a – yeah, there's not a tougher first-round matchup in this bracket just between even teams and Duquesne and Rice. Rice is better than their record. They started really hot, and then they just couldn't win a game in February.
Yeah, and let us not forget, you mentioned that possible semifinal matchup with Indiana State. One of the best back-and-forth shootouts of the entire season when they faced off in the UPMC Cooper Fieldhouse back in December. I would certainly be up for a rematch of that. But, Nick, you're down in Florida. March Madness is kicking off. Where can everyone find your great coverage this week?
Yeah, so at mid_madness on Twitter and at nlawrencesports on Twitter. I'll be posting game updates on my personal Twitter and I'll be keeping tabs with everything else in the country on Mid-Major Madness. We can't take videos of the NCAA tournament, so I do a lot of that. But there will be a lot of words written this week.
Yep, and everyone go make sure to read those words. Nick, thank you as always, covering the mid-majors in a way that no one else can, and thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Zyler. Always love hopping on here talking A-10 hoops. Go Dukes!
All right, a big thanks once again to both Zach and Nick for joining me here. Big thanks to all of you for continuing to listen as we move deep into March. We'll be back next week, hopefully sooner than that. If VCU can get a win, we will have a second round preview coming. But if the Rams or Duquesne are still playing, we'll be talking about that. If not, we'll start to move things into the offseason. Hopefully that is the former, but we will be back next week no matter what. So please be sure to come back, check in. If you've enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a review on there. We really appreciate to hear your thoughts. And let's go VCU.